from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
It's time now to go beyond the headlines, and for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Oh, good morning. A happy Monday, everybody. Thank you for listening on ESPN 1320. Thanks for watching on Twitch and YouTube. And thanks for listening on the free Odyssey app. However you're tapped into the program, we appreciate you. We appreciate our sponsor, Jiffy Lube, as well. James, hello. Good morning. You had an eventful weekend.
I did.
You had a lot going on.
I did.
I want to get into what you had happening this weekend, but I need to get something off my chest first.
Uh-oh.
If you are a Game of Thrones watcher or a House of the Dragon watcher, mute us. Give us 2 minutes here.
Oh. Okay.
I want to talk about the season finale of House of the Dragon.
Okay. You're going to spoiler
and,
alert?
Yeah, so just spoiler alert. I'm letting everybody know. I'm going to try and do this as spoiler free as I can.
Okay.
But just inherently, you can't talk about an episode of television without spoiling it. So we're going to talk about House of the Dragon for 2 minutes here, starting in 3, 2, 1, spoiler alert, House of the Dragon talk starts now. What I could not believe the discourse after the season finale of season 2 of House of the Dragon last night. After Game of Thrones got pilloried, torpedoed for ending too quickly and, oh, they rushed it and, oh, they didn't show us how X, Y, and Z happened. And what makes the show so great is that it's a political drama and they show all the steps that get taken towards these end results. And then in season 8, it was really clear that the creators, I forget their names, were ready to go and they were going to do Star Wars, and they rushed through. They were just kind of done with it. And everybody pointed out throughout season 8 all the issues with that season of television. And now House of the Dragon is doing the opposite. They're showing you all the steps. They have 8 episodes to get this all in. They're showing you Daemon's descent into madness, but then also how that pulled him out and changed him as a person. They didn't just do that overnight, snap your fingers. They're showing you, because that's what everybody wanted from season 8 of Game of Thrones. So they're giving you what you wanted in season 8 of Game of Thrones. They're giving it to you in season 2 at House of the Dragon, so you didn't get to see the dragons fight. Big damn deal. That's coming. They didn't skip it. There's steps to this. This is the process, or the process if you're a jerk. This is the process.
Yeah.
It's the whole reason everybody likes the show. And we're whining that it, oh, I didn't get Minos dragon fight. What? I saw somebody say, why did we even watch the season? Why did we watch the season? So much happened. So many things happened. We have a dragon dying, and we have new dragon riders, and we have a new king, but then we have the stuff going on with the free folk, the small folk. There is so much going on. Daemon Targaryen as a character has changed his entire person altered through the course of this season, and that will surely play a role into the future seasons. So much happened in this season of television. And if you're watching Game of Thrones for me want see dragon fight, then yeah, you were probably disappointed. But that's not the show. That's not the program.
Nope. And you did get to see one or two fights during the season.
You did. You definitely did.
You did.
You literally got to see dragons fighting.
Yes.
Just the big war that we're building to didn't happen yet.
No. Nope.
It's going to happen.
They have at least another season that they need to produce.
Right. And this isn't, had they tried to rush everything through and pump everything through, we would be sitting here going, wait, so why did Daemon suddenly have a change of heart? Wait, hang on. Who? Why did X, Y, and Z happen?
Mm-hmm.
Why did Allison decide to do that? Like, there was so much character development that needed to happen. And it was interesting. It was fascinating. It was a good season of television.
Yeah.
But because we didn't get the big war, it was like, oh, what a waste of time. Like, no, it's still there. It's still coming, I promise.
You just have to wait 2 years.
Right. You just got to wait a little while. It's fine. 2026. Strap in, everyone. Okay. We're off that.
We're back.
We're back. Anyways, you had a big weekend.
I did.
Let's start. Your Sunday, you were on the boat, barbecuing, having a great time, eating tacos, whatever.
Yes,
Saturday. Saturday, you threw out the first pitch of the Rivercats game. That's a big deal. Congratulations.
I did. You know, it was really cool. You know, first of all, it was Marvel night. So the guy who comes to meet me is dressed as Thor. Big, tall guy, long hair, dressed as Thor. It's 106.
Okay.
And so all of these poor, employees, and then they paid for, like, the professionals to come in, are wearing their gear. I mean, there's a guy in a full-fledged Iron Man suit. And it's 106, so I'm not sure how he survived the evening. That was pretty cool, though. So I'm waiting on the field, and everything's cool, and Orphan Andrew. Andrew comes over, and, like...
I thought you were saying Orphan Andrew was dressed as Thor, so was Thorfinn Andrew.
No. Oh, that's tough. That's a tough look. There you go. Anyway, at first I thought I was going to have to throw to Thor, and he said, I don't know if we're going to get a player or not. Maybe we will, maybe we won't.
Right.
He goes and he gets literally one of the worst gloves I've ever seen. Like, he's got like a 1970s glove that was left out in the sun for like 14
years. Hilarious.
So he's like, oh, this is a glove. And I'm like, oh, great. I got to throw to that. That's not good. And you're Thor, so you can't move very well. You're in all
this. Thor is going to catch your first pitch?
Yes, that's what the thought was initially.
Hilarious. Oh my God.
Yes.
That would have been so great.
He's like, you know what? I'm going to go check and see if I can get a better glove. He comes back. He's got a worse glove. This one's been left out in the rain for like 4 years. Like, and then like someone found it under like a dilapidated car in the front yard. Like, it's like, oh, that's where that glove went. So bad. And so I'm like, okay, this is
Thor glove and thunder.
Nice. That's really not like instilling any confidence in what's about to happen. But then it ended up that one of the players came out, Colton Ingram, I believe it was. He relief pitcher.
Shout out.
And so they sent all the Marvel superheroes to surround me on the mound. No, that wasn't awkward.
Incredible.
I got Spider-Man over here doing like the Spider-Man lean down on the ground. This is happening.
What are you talking about? Awkward. This is amazing.
I walk up.
I'm so jealous right now.
I hadn't been on the mound yet, though. I walk up to the mound, and I'm like, damn it, Kyle. You should have warned me.
No. You need to. That mound is pristine.
It's pristine.
It is pristine.
But it's sand.
It's a mound.
I haven't been.
You whining to me about that over text? Ooh, that irked me.
I have flats on, and I get up there, and I'm like,
so did I.
I'm like, oh, no. I was worried I was going to do the splits. Like, so it was all arm. I did get it over, got it over the plate.
Full pitching motion, you're just stepping. You're fine.
Yeah, it worked. I got it over the plate.
You did.
It was a little bit outside, but you can't see that from the angle that we have of the video.
The angle I got, looked like a perfect strike to me. You got the strike call from your boy.
Yeah, I mean, it hit the glove. That's all that mattered. The camera guy's like, ooh, nice pop in the glove. I'm like,
yeah, see?
Hell yeah.
See? And you didn't make the catcher stand up, unlike some people in this show.
Oh. I thought it was a good time. It was just, you know, it wasn't even all that nerve-wracking. Just go out there. The intro was nice. And just line up and hurl. There was one guy who sat behind us who yelled, "You suck," right, as I'm pitching, who's sitting behind, like, my wife and boys. But I learned, like, throughout the game that that's what he does to every single thing the entire game. So that didn't
bug
me.
Oh, good, yeah. No, that's the best kind of heckler.
Yeah, all you want... I wanted to go sit behind him and heckle him because sure. It was, like, obnoxious the whole game. And then I think they put us where the players' wives are. Like, that's the seats were really nice, but
yeah.
I believe that behind me was players' wives and all their little tiny kids, which were dolls. They were all amazing.
Incredible.
Yeah. It was a good time.
Yeah, man.
It was hot.
A little warm. A little warm out there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, love going out to Sutter Health Park. Great, great little minor league field, minor league experience. And you can experience that with us. We have a suite up there at Sutter Health Park. Mm-hmm. On August 16th, that is next Friday. So August 16th, we're going to have a suite at Sutter Health Park, and we're giving away tickets to help fill that suite. So later on in today's show, we're going to give you a keyword. We'll give you the keyword a couple of times. We'll give you a keyword. You go to ESPN1320.com. You're going to enter that keyword. And when you do, you'll be entered to win two tickets to our suite at Sutter Health Park, where we will be hanging out, enjoying some baseball, and... catching a good vibe.
Yeah.
I can't wait to be inside for a game.
Yeah. Inside where there might be air conditioning.
Yeah.
And as long as it's on the third base side, man, if they put you on the first base side.
Dude. So that's a big thing at Levi's Stadium, right?
Oh, yeah.
Is the sun is just brutal on the side opposite the press boxes.
Yes.
And... so my mom's season tickets are on the opposite side. So her seats are never in the sun.
Oh, okay.
At least, I mean, once, by the time we're in the stadium, her seats are never in the sun.
Okay.
So we've never had to deal with that. But I can imagine, just based on what it looks like at the end of the first half and the start of the second half, how many people are cleared out in various clubs around Levi's Stadium because they don't want to be in those seats. That's how it was at the Rivercats game. That I went to, and I'm sure yours as well, where that entire first base side is empty.
Yeah, the whole third base side all the way around, mm-hmm. and all behind the backstop, and then you get to about, I don't know, maybe three sections over
mm-hmm.
from where home plate is.
Yeah,
it's nobody.
Just sun gets behind the park, people start filling in there.
Yeah.
It fills in throughout the game, but you can tell it's just that sun is tough. So come hang out in a suite instead. Again, ESPN1320.com. We'll give you that code word. You enter the code word at the contest page, and you'll be entered to win two tickets to the ESPN 1320 suite at Sutter Health Park on Friday, August 16th. I went to training camp this weekend.
Ooh.
So we were discussing whether to go August 3rd or August 4th. And so Saturday or Sunday, Chris Biederman, my podcast partner who works for the Sacramento Bee, has been on the show a bunch of times. He had a prior commitment on the Saturdays, so he goes Sunday. Well, on Saturday, the Niners had this like 2.5 hour long, just grueling practice. Pads on, the works.
Mm-hmm.
So when we go out there, not only did we get a super short practice, but there weren't even, nobody had pads on. They just went shells, which is just helmets. So didn't get to glean a lot from the practice, but I had some takeaways. But my overall one, the experience is fun. The Niners beat is a great group, fun people to hang around. Getting to be out of practice, go out, sit in a couple press conferences, do all that. It was great. Super easy day, super nice. I have always taken training camp things with a grain of salt.
Mm-hmm.
When X event happens in training camp, it's notable because, yeah, hey, this player has had three really good days in a row of camp. That's notable. But it's also super important to just keep practice in context. And it's just, it's really clear that there are so many things that happen over the course of a practice. You can go, oh, wow, Ricky Pearsall made a really tough catch on D'Amador Lenore. But also, was it a sack? It might have been a sack because they don't take the quarterback down.
Mm-hmm.
So it might have been a sack. Also, Pearsall didn't run a great route there. It didn't create a ton of separation. Like there's there's so much context missing from reports out of camp.
Yeah.
And I'm at the point now where I know practice matters so much to coaches and matters maybe even more than the preseason games. But my willingness to overreact to one thing that happened in camp now is just gone. I used to be cool with like, yeah, hey, you know what? I'll spice this up a little bit. I don't have it in me anymore. It just didn't feel like a lot happened. And maybe it was the nature of the practice, but everybody I talked to was just kind of like, yeah, it's just kind of how it is.
I think I kind of got burned this way early in my career covering the Kings because we had a year, I can't remember if it was my first, I think it was my second year covering mm-hmm. the team where they had Carl Landry on the team, mm-hmm. but then they brought Marcus Landry in to like give him an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up being way better than the guys that they had small forward position, or at least like while those guys were fighting it out,
mm-hmm.
he just seemed to go out and do the job. So they ended up starting him in one or two preseason games, and sort of a lot of the focus was on, you know, this whole Marcus Landry mm-hmm. thing and all that. And then they cut him.
Huh.
And you're like, oh, what just happened? And I thought it was weird because I don't think it helped their relationship with his brother.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's one thing if his brother came in as like a favor and was like, okay. It's a whole other thing if his brother comes in and actually plays well and then
yeah.
you kind of use him to push other people type deal.
Mm-hmm.
Then it becomes a little bit of a problem when you wave him when he outplays everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But I also learned very quickly, like training camp, you know, means absolutely nothing. Preseason means absolutely nothing at the NBA level. And you just kind of, you know.
I think and that's the thing is I don't, in the NBA, it's a little different because we know we can name the Kings roster right now.
Yeah.
You just go through and name the 14 dudes who are going to be on the team. With the NFL, it's a little different because they got 90 guys on the field.
Oh, yeah, it's wild.
Or on the roster, not necessarily on the field. And they've got to get that to 53, which means they're cutting 37 players.
Whew.
And then the roster makeup is, okay, are they keeping two or three quarterbacks? Are they keeping five or six receivers? Are they keeping five or six defensive backs? Are they keeping nine offensive linemen? Like, there's so many different ways it can go. And so there are things to take away and things to watch, but it's impossible to know exactly what the coaches are seeing on film, what they're asking this player to work on in practice. Maybe they're lining this guy up in a position he's never going to line up. They know he's going to make the team.
Mm-hmm.
But they're lining him up in practice at a spot where he's uncomfortable because they want him to get those reps. And he just looks terrible in camp. But the coaches know, yeah, hey, he's getting better at these very specific things we want him to get better at. And that was just kind of the big thing for me yesterday. And the fact that there are so many guys, like Brock Purdy's lining up because the way the Niners line up their first team is they go first team offensive line, but it's no Trent Williams. And then Spencer Burford, who's supposed to be competing for the starting right guard job, he's hurt. John Feliciano has been hurt, but they know he can play right guard, so he's been working in as a backup center. And so they have their quote-unquote starting offensive line, their starting quarterback, but then they rotate in a couple different running backs. They rotate in a ton of different receivers. And so when it's Brock Purdy out there with Chris Conley and Frank Darby and Eric Saubert at tight end, I'm not taking anything away from the fact that he had to check down on that play.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
There was just a lot to take away from just the urgency. And maybe it's just the 49ers because the training camp to that, like they know what their goal is.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of question about what they're hoping to accomplish this year. Like the goal is the goal and they've been close and they know that they can get close again this year. Maybe it's just that, and this is all just very businesslike for them, but the urgency was just not nearly as high as I thought it was going to be.
I think even training camp, the goal is very specific. Just don't get hurt.
That's it.
Like, please nobody go down in a heap where we got to come out there because you blew an ACL.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, I haven't been to a 49ers training camp like as a media member,
mm-hmm.
but as a kid, I went to Rockland all the time.
Yeah.
My dad would take us down. We'd go get autographs and like mm-hmm. sit at the fence and you get to watch from way far away.
Mm-hmm.
But really the reason why you're there is to go get autographs when you're a kid.
Sure.
But I think it does, like, NBA camp is so much different than NFL camp because of the sheer number of people and mm-hmm. how they pare down and how you know going in who's going to make the team and not. Like, very, very seldom is there someone who surprises you.
Yeah.
Like, oh, surprise, they made the team. It's like, yeah, no, Sam Merrill was on the bubble, but they were always going to value the roster spot, an open roster spot, right. more than they would a young guy who, you know, is going to go play in the G League.
Right.
So, yeah, it's difficult, but with the NFL, there's just so many people. I remember walking around Sierra College, and there are dudes just hanging out everywhere while practice is going on. They're like, yeah, I'm hurt today, and I'm just, like, hanging out over here by the bookstore. And you can get guys to sign your autographs there. That's You're crazy. Like, I don't even know who this guy is.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Brock Purdy yesterday was like an hour and 10 minutes late. I guess not late because there's not like a set time. But he was out signing autographs for so long after practice. We were waiting for like an hour and 10 minutes.
Oh.
For Brock to come in. And that's just
cool, though.
Right, that's just what it is. Like, yeah. We're not doing anything. Like, I got all day. Like, just, so I thought that was cool. But I did feel bad because there's kind of two fields where they practice. It's like two fields next to each other, and there's pretty significant space between the two fields. And there's seating next to both, but all the team stuff happens on the opposite side. And so if you're sitting near this field, you see like nothing.
Oh yeah.
You are so far away from the actual move the ball team stuff that's going on. And it's not like you can just get up and go to the other side. I guess just kind of that's where you're sitting for the day.
Mm.
So I did feel bad for them. But players come over to that group too and they do the whole autograph thing, and that's what there's so many kids just sitting front and center, which was really fun. A couple of takeaways for me from 49ers camp. George Kittle is the most popular 49er.
Oh, really?
And I don't know how close it is. At least Christian McCaffrey didn't do team drills yesterday, and neither Debo Samuel had a rest day, so he wasn't even suited up. Brandon Ayuk obviously not out there. Trent Williams obviously not out there. But George Kittle would do anything, and cheers. The defensive line was walking down from their position drills to go towards team drills. They walked in front of the crowd. Everybody erupting in cheers, but only for Bosa. People only calling for Bosa. Not a lot of big Javon Hargrave fans in the building. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Ricky Pearsall. I don't think he's ready.
Oh, really?
And I think the 49ers are making a huge mistake. We'll talk about the Brandon Ayuk trade stuff here in a bit, but I think they would be making a huge mistake if they trade Brandon Ayuk and hope that Ricky Pearsall is just going to be a close enough facsimile of Brandon Ayuk.
Ooh.
And that's not to say he can't get there. He's got, what, five padded practices under his belt? Like, he's not... I'm not writing off Ricky Pearsall, but I think when you look at what happened with the DeForest Buckner trade, where they were in a similar spot, where this really good player that they like very much wanted X amount of dollars, and they believed that that was too much money, so they thought that they could improve the team by moving that player, getting an asset back, and then retaining other players with the additional money that they saved, which is, I think, kind of their thought process on Ayuk. The Niners have had a really hard time replacing DeForest Buckner.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they would have a really hard time replacing Brandon Ayuk. And again, Ricky Pearsall might be awesome. But I do think that it would be a mistake if they're just going, yeah, we're in on Ricky Pearsall. We think he'll just be the next guy and we'll trade Ayuk and then that'll be fine because Ricky Pearsall's here. Again, super early in his career. Maybe he's a future all pro. But the bigger thing for me was if that's just their plan, regardless of who the player is, maybe it's Chris Conley, maybe it's Frank Darby, maybe it's Ronnie Bell, whoever it is, I just think that would be a mistake. I think that's bad process.
With Pearsall, is it that he's not getting separation?
Yeah.
Or is it that he's not clean enough on his routes yet?
No, like, he route runs like a beast.
Yeah, yeah.
But like I mentioned earlier, he had a tough catch on Diameter Lenore.
Uh-huh.
But that was because Lenore was in his hip pocket. Mm. He just didn't separate. He got separation on Rock Ya-Sin a little bit earlier in practice, but he's fine, but I wasn't blown away.
Got it.
I wasn't, but again, it's so early in his career. Maybe he gets into games and is great. Ronnie Bell, speaking of your guy,
Yeah.
I'm in. I know I just said not to overreact to training camp practices, but I was of the mind going into camp that he wasn't going to make the team.
Oh.
But if he's going to play special teams, and then he's now been stacking multiple good practices together where he's making tough catches in traffic, and he's he was on the same page with Purdy on a scramble yesterday where Purdy's scrambling left, and Ronnie Bell started working back towards the middle because Brock loves that throw back to the middle, as dangerous as it is. He loves that throw, and Bell was able to cut off his route and go find it, and he found him for a nice completion. So I think Ronnie Bell is going to make the team. Because if he's at least a serviceable receiver with his special team stuff, I don't think they can cut him.
Are they keeping five or are they keeping six?
I think they'll probably keep six.
Okay. Who will be the six with Pearsall?
Pearsall, I'm going to say Ayuk for now.
Oh, yeah.
Debo.
Juwan Jennings.
And probably Jacob Cowing, their fourth round pick, who hasn't practiced yet because of a hamstring injury.
Okay.
But I imagine that they're going to keep him around as a fourth round pick.
And then probably like keep Connolly around like
practice squad.
Yeah.
Or so. Trent Taylor, the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, man. I think Ronnie Bell just, maybe the 49ers don't like him. Maybe there's something, again, they're watching so many like little minutia of their offense that I don't.
I like him. They don't have another guy like him. He's small. He kind of, you know, he kind of moves well. I don't know.
Yeah, he had a good preseason last year for sure. And if he can return punts, that just helps his case. I think he's going to make the team. Jalen Graham and D. Winters, the two second-year linebackers, can play flat out. They showed out a little bit in last year's preseason. They just move like NFL players.
Got it.
I am all in on both of those guys. I think only one of them is going to start this year. Which I thought was kind of interesting. Defensive coordinator Nick Sorensen in his press conference, one of the questions was about, so it's Fred Warner, he's going to play every snap, but then Devondre Campbell, who they signed as a free agent, has been lining up as the linebackers on the field for all three downs, the Will linebacker.
Yeah, yeah.
He's going to be on the field all three downs. Then there's a Sam who's only in like running situations. So he's going to play he's been playing the Will, and a reporter basically opined that maybe Graham or Winters could start at the Will. And Nick Sorensen literally put his hands up, like, slow down. And he's like, Devondre's going to be out there. So he just, I've never seen a coach shoot down talk of competition like that.
Wow.
It was crazy. He was like, well, Devondre's going to be out there with Fred. And then did the whole, like, sidestep the question about who's playing well between Graham and Winters. Like, oh, we really like that whole group and blah, blah, blah. But I think they can both play. A couple more. Cody Schrader, undrafted running back. He's going to make the team. And I think fourth round pick Isaac Garendo, who is dealing with a hamstring, is not going to make the team.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Just Niners keep whiffing on mid round picks, it looks like, at running back. And then Diamond Lenore is really good. And the 49ers secondary might be really good.
Okay.
Which is wild because they just haven't invested a ton in that spot. But Lenore and Treverius Ward, I think, are both free agents next year, and I think they're both going to get priced out of what the 49ers can afford. I think they're both going to have really good years.
That's really tough.
It's how it goes.
Yeah.
Lenore obviously took a big jump last year, but it sounds like by all accounts, they're expecting him to make another one this year. Sorensen was really complimentary of him yesterday, and he just kept showing up in practices around the football a lot. He plays inside, he plays outside. Just a really, really good player. The Niners might have some good players in that secondary this year. And Talanoa Hufanga is not even practicing yet. Mm. He's supposed to start practicing here in a couple of weeks. So, all right. We've got Rivercats tickets to give away. We have NFL preseason football this Saturday. We'll be carrying the Raiders at Vikings. 12:30 p.m. is when coverage begins there. We will dive into some preseason football talk throughout the week. But today, we've got some Olympic stuff. We've got Brandon Ayuk trade talk, and why does everybody hate Kyle Shanahan?
Oof.
I got questions. We'll talk about it next on The Insiders. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Jiffy Lube's a sponsor on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a Gel Flex Grid. The Gel Flex Grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the Gel Flex Grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Wow.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Are you looking that up?
No.
What Tom L. just said in the chatty house?
I can.
Okay, yeah. Look that up because I want... We have a new local business to shout out real quick. We would like to welcome Kitchen Mart to our growing group of advertisers here on ESPN 1320. Starting today, you will be hearing ads from the homies at Kitchen Mart on the Insiders and D'Lo and KC. We just want to salute them. We really appreciate their support of our station here. If you're thinking about kitchen or bathroom remodeling, though, we'd appreciate you checking them out at kitchenmart.com. Again, hello, Kitchen Mart. Welcome to ESPN 1320. Welcome to the family. We appreciate you and look forward to the partnership. All right. You want to do our giveaway now?
Yeah.
I feel like if I don't do it now, we're going to forget.
No, like that's our fear that we forget. Like what we
literally day one.
There was one day like during the season where we had forgotten to give away like two tickets. $100 Jiffy Lube gift card gift certificates from the weekend.
Yes,
on a Monday. And then there was a game that night, and then we got to like Tuesday, and we had like three.
We were just every segment like, we're given style. We're just here's the name. We got this name.
The password is.
So we're giving away two tickets to a Rivercats game on August 16th, and not just any old Rivercats game. We have a suite at Sutter Health Park, and we're inviting you. Go to ESPN1320.com right now. You're gonna find the contest page, and at the contest page, you are going to enter the keyword. Now, keep in mind, this is word. It's one word from what I understand and what has been given to me.
Okay.
The keyword, one word, is hot dog.
Hot dog.
Hot dog.
Get your hot dogs.
Hot dog, one word, H-O-T-D-O-G.
Okay.
Hot dog, one word, at ESPN1320.com, and you'll be entered to win two tickets to our suite at Sutter Health Park for the Rivercats game on Friday, August 16th.
I think I take down three glizzy.
Thank you, Leezy.
Leezy.
Hot dog. And speaking of baseball, did you see the White Sox have lost 20 games in a row?
That's so many games.
It is so, look.
What this do you is, mean? This you is a bad. Sad going to the game every
Yeah,
day.
Man. And especially with baseball, especially in August.
Yeah.
You're in the, you're post trade deadline. You're in the dog days. It's hot. You're playing in Chicago. It's humid. Yuck.
No, that's horrible.
That's so bad. That's one of the reasons you know that baseball is a distant third place to the NFL and to the NBA.
Mm.
If there was an NFL team that had lost 20 consecutive regular season games, it would be talked about everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
The Detroit Pistons were a story this year because of their losing streak.
Yeah, they lost over 20, right?
Yeah, 27, I think.
Oh my gosh.
It was a lot. Maybe they didn't get 27. It was a lot, though.
I think I've covered a couple of 9-game losing streaks.
Which is brutal.
It is. But there was in my first season, the Kings lost 15 out of 16. They lost, I think it was 7 straight. And then they beat the Wizards on, it was supposed to be the first time that John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins faced each other. And John Wall got hurt in warmups. He hurt his wrist in warmups and couldn't play. So he was announced as a starter, but then didn't play. And the Kings won that night. And then they went on to lose like 8 straight. It was really, really brutal.
Yikes, man.
Bryce said it was 28 straight.
28 straight for the Pistons. What do you even do? Okay, hang on. Let me finish my point about the White Sox, and then I want to get to that. It is the fact the White Sox have lost 20 straight games, and it's not any. It's on ES. It's on. You can dig around and find it on ESPN. Yeah. But it's not like if we went out on the street and there had been an NFL team that lost 20 straight. You go, hey, can you name the NFL team that's lost 20 straight games?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? Half the people?
Yeah.
50% of the people would know? If I went out to
people would know for sure.
If I went out to downtown Sacramento right now and went, hey, which MLB team has lost 20 straight games?
Like Kyle on Front Street?
1 out of 10? One maybe?
Yeah.
1 out of 20?
Yeah.
Might know?
Maybe. I don't even think that.
Yeah, dude. That's
Does that speak volumes about the about MLB?
Yeah. It's just so regional.
Oh.
I think that's really what it is. I think you go to Chicago, obviously people are gonna know. And I think if you go anywhere in that general Chicago Midwest area,
mm-hmm.
people are in general going to know. But if I go to Seattle, or if I go to New York, I go to Atlanta.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone gives a rip.
Uh-uh.
Tough. How do you even do that as a writer? Because for me, since I've been like writing in depth about the 49ers. They've mostly been good. 2018 was my first year covering the team. I say covering, blogging about the team mm-hmm. in full time. And they were, I say full time, as a site editor, not a contributor. And they were kind of like, oh, okay, maybe make the playoffs. They were that kind of team. And then Jimmy got hurt in week 3 and their season got derailed. But there was, you know, the Garoppolo stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was at least kind of interesting. And then there was the 19 season, they go to the Super Bowl. Then 20, they had all the injuries. And then since then, 21, 22, 23, they went to the NFC title game and the Super Bowl and every year. I don't know how I would handle just, it might be a couple years from now, where they're just terrible. And game in and game out, you just kind of know, hey, they're probably losing today.
Okay, so I've covered that, like, my first couple of years covering the Kings was just brutal because right. It wasn't just basketball related. They also had 2 full-blown relocation attempts in the following the 2010-11 season and then the 2012-13 season.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the whole time you're being pulled one way and pulled another way and, like, you're trying to focus on basketball. But during that stretch, so my first year, they won 24 games. The next year was lockout shortened. So it was only 66, but the Kings won 22.
Oof.
Then 28, 28, and 29.
Good Lord. Not even 30.
Yeah, so my...
Oh, my God.
It's crazy. My claim to fame for a long time, like almost 10 years of my career, was the most wins I had seen in a season was 33, and that's a George Karl year, which means... You know what that means?
Oh, no.
That means like 49 losses was my best season.
And the George Karl year wasn't like sunshine and rainbows.
No, it was chaos and it was horrible. He wasn't fun to deal with at all. Right. He was not fun to deal with on a daily basis. No one had a good time. Like I can't believe the players, anyone there had a good time at all.
Oh.
You had people complaining to the media that, complaining to their friends at ESPN that George Karl's assistants weren't allowed to have dinner with the team chef. The team chef wasn't allowed to make them food. There was all of this like bitter infighting, like weird stuff the whole time. You had the snake in the grass comment by DeMarcus Cousins leading into the season.
Yeah.
So it wasn't even that the basketball was bad, and that was the best season, the 33 win season. All the years before that, 29, 28, 28, 22, 24, those are all of my first years. That's why when we talk about coming into the, like 2 years ago, I was 250 games under 500 as a beat writer.
Oh, but you're creeping up now.
Yeah.
Where are you at now?
Well, I mean, they've
48.
Like probably I'm still like 220.
No, it's fine. So are they 48?
I'd have to look.
So they were 7 over last year?
Yeah.
Or 2 years ago? And then 5 over last year? Is that right?
No, it's more than 5. No, no, no. When you're 48 and 34, you're 14 games over.
Oh, 30. Yeah, math is hard.
Yeah, so 14, and last year they were 10 games over.
So 24?
So 24.
226?
Something like that.
Come on.
Something like that.
Hey, trend in the right direction.
Yeah, yeah. I know that.
You're getting under 220 this year.
After my first 12 years, I needed 12 straight 50-season wins to get back to 500. Yeah. So it's tough,
three
right?
Three straight 50-win seasons is hard.
No, it's... but like watching the chaos of a team like that, you know, it's not easy because changes are always coming. Coaches, again, mm-hmm. like we talk about, I've had 9 head coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Like change is always coming because you're not successful. You talk about the Pistons this year. They lose 28 straight. It was so bad that they fired a guy with $60 million remaining on his
Insane.
Coaching contract.
Insane.
No, that's wild because now they're paying someone else that whole time too.
Yeah.
So they're going to be out like almost $20 million in coaching salaries every year
mm-hmm.
for 6 years. I mean, that's wild. And that's if they don't fire somebody else midway through their contract and all of a sudden they're paying right. 3 coaches.
And this all comes back to the conversation that we kept having about Mike Brown, right? And why you need to get the Mike Brown deal done.
Yeah.
Because that stability, because now, okay, so they fired Monty Williams and they're paying Monty Williams $20 million a year for the next 4 years or however long it is.
It's I think that he had 6 years, 5 years at 60 left, so maybe more than that. It was a lot.
They're paying Monty Williams top of market money.
Top of market.
For the next 4 years or 5 years or whatever it is. And now they have a new coach that maybe this new coach stinks,
mm-hmm.
but they're probably gonna hold on to him longer than they want to because they don't want to pay another coach to not coach them.
Yes.
And that starts sending your team culture down into a spiral.
Uh-huh.
Like that's just a really, really hard spot to be in. And maybe the new coach is awesome and it gets the Pistons trending the right way. But you open yourself up to that.
Yeah.
Where once that losing cycle starts, it's really, really hard to get out of it.
It is. It's a death spiral that happens, and then just like a general malaise falls over the team where guys are like, hey, like I would like to get out of here. And then even with the Kings, like my first, I think it was a like 18 months after I had, like after my first season, like 8 players were out of the NBA from that team. So that's the other problem. It's that not only can you not get free agents and you're, their ownership at that point was not paying.
Mm-hmm.
Like they ran the lowest payroll my first 2 seasons under the Maloofs.
Brutal.
In the NBA. They traded for players who were out with injury and likely were never going to play again 2 years in a row just to get to the salary floor. So that was a problem. It just like plays into this never ending cycle that you're getting guys who are on their way out of the league. A lot of them. Yeah. And it's like last ditch effort to try to save themselves in the league. And that doesn't help either. You know, it just like so many players gone.
Yeah.
I mean, like my first team, guys like Pujetter, Darnell Jackson, Dante Green, Luther Head,
mm-hmm.
Antoine Wright.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was Hassan Whiteside before he came back to the league. Mm-hmm. There were so many players that were never going to play in the league. Jermaine Taylor that were never going to play in the league again. And it so that was like a weird feeling as well to be part of. Like I was just getting my feet wet and trying to figure out what was happening.
Yeah,
yeah.
And you're in just this very abnormal situation.
Yeah. Like we've had moments because I've been doing this for a long time now, but like moments where we're going into like Luke Walton, his last couple of games, right? Mm-hmm. And we have what's known as the puke game, right? Where the guy starts throwing up all over himself on the court and they had to delay the game. He's sitting front row and that night Luke Walton the next day or whatever, he's getting let go. And like young reporters were walking in, like, what do we say? Because everyone kind of knows what's happening. It's like, you guys just sit back. Like we got this. Like Sean mm-hmm. Cunningham and Jason Anderson from the B. Like we've been through this quite a few times.
Yeah.
You guys can sit back and just kind of like, we'll try to do the best we can to get us all through this situation.
Yeah.
Because it's hard because, you know, you don't want to see someone get fired. You don't like,
well, and it's super awkward because you can't address the elephant in the room.
Well, and sometimes you have to address some of the biggest elephants in the room in those situations. Like, you know,
but you can't, let me rephrase that. You can't just go, so Luke, you're going to get fired.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
No, it can't be something
like
that.
There's a like delicacy to it, but everybody knows.
But everyone knows. And that's where it becomes really awkward and really tough.
Yeah. I don't.
Yeah,
ugh.
Yeah, it's weird.
It kind of makes me wonder why. I was thinking about this yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Brandon Ayuk trade stuff is really firing back up. That rumor mill is fully back, and we'll talk about it in a bit. But I experienced this a lot at 95.7 with some of the certainly the hosts, but definitely callers. We hear it here with TC. I don't understand why 49er fans hate Kyle Shanahan. Okay. I don't get it.
I was intrigued by this because I saw it on the rundown, and I know you were there, and I don't know, I didn't know what direction you were going to take this. If this was like, you were there, and the general consensus is that nobody likes him while you're there.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
So I didn't know if it was that or if it was like fans.
No, I've wondered this for a long time. This has always been, because I don't think Kyle Shanahan's a perfect coach by any means, but it's hard to argue with the track record.
Yeah, the winning.
Yeah, that's kind of where I land. But I saw yesterday somebody in talking about the Brandon Ayuk trade stuff said Kyle Shanahan is so arrogant that he would be willing to trade Brandon Ayuk because he thinks he can get it done with just anyone, whereas coaches like Sean McVay and Andy Reid understand the importance of players.
Reid traded
Tyreek Hill. Yes.
That just dumped him.
In this exact scenario.
Just dumped him.
Where they went, hey, he's going to make more money than we want to pay a receiver, so we're going to trade him. The exact scenario.
And
I thought that was just a fascinating insight into that section of 49ers fandom that goes, every Brandon Ayuk wanting more money and the Niners not wanting to give it to him is Kyle Shanahan's fault because he's arrogant. And that's the word that always gets thrown around. My guy Matt Kolsky, who's no longer at 95.7 The Game, salute to Matt, hope he's doing well. He would call it, this is the exact quote, scheme arrogance. And that's every coach has a scheme that they stick to.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm missing something. And maybe I don't know. Maybe I'm missing the argument here. But the Niners aren't considering trading Brandon Ayuk because Kyle Shanahan said, do it. See me win without Brandon Ayuk. Like he's made it very clear he wants to have good players on his team.
Yeah, I'm just like taken aback. It's not just Tyreek Hill. I mean, Charvarius Ward is a 49ers defensive back because they didn't want to, because the Chiefs didn't want to pay him.
Yeah. L'Jarius Sneed is on the Titans now because the Chiefs didn't want to pay him.
Yeah. And who was the, D Ford, traded to the Niners because he didn't want to pay him.
Mm-hmm.
And so
it worked out well for them. But yeah, Chris Jones didn't play week one last year.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want to pay him.
Now, look, I understand, like, watching a Kyle Shanahan, like, press conference and coming away with thinking that he's a cocky dude. Like, there is a certain amount of arrogance to him. But, like, in order to make it to that stage, in order to be really good at what you do in almost any business, you have to be a little bit cocky. You have to be a little bit arrogant. You have to be, like, like the fake it till you make it. It's that you have to have ultimate confidence in yourself to walk into each of those rooms and do your job. And if you don't have it, then it does not go well for you.
That's it, dude.
And so I'm okay with that. Like, do I have problems with some of his play calling in some of the biggest moments?
100%.
Sure.
No doubt.
Sure. But the fact that they're in some of the biggest moments in the NFL year after year after year, you also have to understand that. No?
I'm in lockstep with you here. Andy Reid's also a terrible example.
Yeah.
Andy Reid didn't win a Super Bowl until his 21st year as a head coach. He didn't win a Super Bowl until he got Patrick freaking Mahomes.
There is that, yeah.
And you think Andy Reid's not arrogant? He's got his huddle playing Ring Around the Rosie before going and running to the line. Like, you think that's strategic? No, that's him messing with his opponent.
Yeah.
Because he knows he's going to win. He knows he's the guy. Andy Reid's the best head coach in the NFL right now, and he knows it.
Yeah.
So I'm, in fact, you know what? Here, let me, 916-909-1320, 916-909-1320. If you're out on Kyle Shanahan as a 49er fan, I'd like to know why.
Oh, okay.
Because you can't, to me, you can't yearn for the days of Jim Harbaugh and then turn around and call Kyle Shanahan unsuccessful. Because if what Jim Harbaugh did was success, then that's what Kyle Shanahan has done.
Yeah.
And I think it's forgetting a little bit the train wreck of the 2014 season for the 49ers. That season was a mess. And there was a lot going on. It was Jed York was a problem. Trent Baalke was a problem. But it's not like Jim Harbaugh overcame all this stuff and was this awesome coach who was able to adapt to all that. Like, no, man, he whiffed in the 2014 season. It wasn't all perfect. That's not to say Jim Harbaugh is not an awesome coach. I think he is. But it's to say that, hey, sometimes you have a bad year. And for Kyle Shanahan, he took over in 2016, the Niners went 2-14. They beat the Rams twice. 2017, they went 4-12, was it? They were not good. And then 2018, they have the Jimmy Garoppolo injury.
Yep.
No, I guess they went 6-10 because Jimmy Garoppolo won the five games at the end of 2017. That's right. The Garoppolo injury in 18. But then when they've had a healthy quarterback, or for the most part, healthy quarterback, has been Super Bowl, NFC title game, NFC title game, Super Bowl. Pretty good run.
He's been good. Yeah.
I'd be interested. Is Raider fan. I know there's a bunch of you listening. 916-909-1320, 916-909-1320. If in the offseason, I don't want to say right now because the logistics would be crazy, but if in the offseason the Niners had fired Kyle Shanahan and the Raiders had, instead of hiring Antonio Pierce, hired Kyle Shanahan, would you have been excited about that?
Oh, yeah. I think Raiders fans would have been
I
off.
I assume so. Maybe.
Yeah.
I could definitely be wrong.
He's not, if he does ever lose his job in San Francisco, he won't.
He's getting another job right away.
The next day.
I think you have to.
Yeah.
There's the team building stuff where, because look, I agree with you. Some of his play calls in big spots, like some of his clock management in big spots, has been at best questionable, at best, and at times abysmal. I think his old school approach to the game sometimes hinders him.
Yeah.
For sure. Again, not a perfect coach, but I don't. That's not enough for me to be like, oh, they need somebody new. You look at the coaching staff he brought in and how many guys that he has brought into his coaching staff that go get jobs elsewhere, either as coordinators or head coaches.
Yeah, he's
got a sterling track record there.
He's like a head coaching like mill.
Yeah, they are just a machine of hiring good coaches who go get jobs elsewhere.
Yes.
The roster that this team is constructed is largely like Kyle Shanahan is overseeing the construction of that roster. There's a front office, other people have a say, but he kind of has final say. If you're going to blame him fully for this Brandon Ayuk situation, then you also have to credit him for everything else that's gone right with the roster over the past half decade.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. Like I said, maybe I'm looking at this the wrong way. Don, help me out. Don, do you hate Kyle Shanahan as a 49er fan? Or are you a Raider fan who would, answering that aspect of the question, go on.
Not a Raider fan. I'm a Niner fan. I'm happy with Kyle Shanahan. I just want to take this angle on it. If we've all sort of universally agreed that, you know, what Ayuk is asking for is too much, right? 30 million, whatever that is, 30 plus, it's too much. So if we've all agreed that it's too much money, then why is Kyle all of a sudden arrogant for not wanting to pay what we've agreed is too much for Brandon Ayuk? I feel like that pretty much simplifies the answer for you.
Man, you and your logic.
Thanks, Don.
You and your logic.
Yeah, I don't like.
I get the point.
The thing with that specifically though is it's not Kyle Shanahan pulling the strings on the money. I bet Kyle Shanahan doesn't even know what the salary cap number is. That the salary cap stuff is all done by people in the front office, Parag Marathe and guys like that. Like there's financial stuff at work here where they're going, hey, here's AB. We talked about this with the Kings.
Yeah.
It's not just go get DeMar DeRozan. It's okay, there's DeMar DeRozan piece, but then what are the pieces that fall after that?
Yeah.
Or if we trade for Zach LaVine, what does that do in the future? What are the dominoes that fall after that? It's looking at, and I'm guessing that the front office is going, okay, we can pay him X amount of money, but that means it's going to cost you George Kittle and Debo Samuel next year. And Christian McCaffrey the year after that, and we would be able to pay Brock X amount of dollars, which he may or may not take, so we could wind up having a quarterback holdout. Like there's all these different things. I don't think it's Kyle Shanahan has walked over, drawn a line in the sand and said, hey, you don't pay him a cent over $27 million. I promise that's not what happened.
No. And if we go back to the Tim Kawakami interview with Kyle Shanahan, he's very specific and said, look, I want all my players to make as much money as possible. Like, I get what their bodies, what this does to them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and it's just like the same with me. Like, my players should be happy if I get a pay increase.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they shouldn't be looking at that as, like, trying to take it away from something that they're making.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, but there is a dynamics of the salary cap and how we have to fit everybody else in. And at some point, you just can't pay everybody everything that they want.
Mm-hmm.
Because you end up running into the cap and running out of money and not being able to do what you want to do as a team.
Right.
And then it becomes excruciatingly painful with who's losing their job this year and how many players are not going to be here that are so integral to what we're doing
mm-hmm.
that we won't be nearly as good as we are today.
Yeah.
It's like, it's tough. We've got really good players. And we don't have a great offensive line. We got NFL starters on our offensive line because we have to pay... The other guys, right. The other guys that are, you know, the ones that scored the touchdowns.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah, man. We'll talk about some of the Brandon Ayuk trade stuff. There was an interesting article that Matt Maiocco wrote.
Mm-hmm.
I have been staunchly in the camp that the 49ers wouldn't trade Brandon Ayuk. But this thing that Matt Maiocco wrote, I want to discuss it with you in particular as somebody who has been an NBC Sports insider and try and explain why I think there's more to Maiocco's article than just some random speculation. We'll talk about that next. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insiders. Jiffy Lube's a sponsor on ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Leader.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket. Follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.